Time now for the second hour of our big two-hour weekend get-together here on A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison, and here is the host of the program, Carol Marks, in conversation with Dr. William Healy. He's a retired general surgeon and a medical consultant, and he's going to talk to Carol about his new book titled Osprey, published by Excibris Corporation.
Now, when you were a practicing surgeon, you wrote many articles in medical and lay journals. But did you ever see yourself as an author who would write a murder mystery?
No, I didn't. I enjoyed reading them, but I never really had the time to, you know, to do it until I was getting near retirement. And then I thought it might be fun. So I did it little by little.
Now, the plot in Osprey revolves around a major world power trying to strengthen its position in the world by killing the American president. Do you see assassinations as a new trend, or have there been many other plots to kill presidents, and maybe we just haven't heard about them?
Well, I don't know, but there have been several assassinations recently in the world, not the least of which has been in our country. So I don't know. It's relatively easy to get close enough to world leaders to assassinate them, and I hope that it doesn't spread.
I hope so too. Now, in the book, Russia, with the help of another country, hatches this potentially heinous act because of what America seems to be doing with another world power, China. So, in your book, what's going on with China? And you know that scenario might come true in real life.
Well, that was one of the reasons that I put that in the plot. It again, I have no inside information, but I think that it's reasonable to assume that three world powers are going to differentiate into two and one, and let's just see what happens. I obviously cannot predict the future, but recently, the last decade or so, Russia has, if you will, gone down, and China has come up, and what that means, I don't know.
But time is going to tell. Well, you know, the fact that you did a lot of research for the book certainly shows, because you point out the fact that Russia's, you know, spending a fortune on military and its equipment. At the same time, it's having to spend an awful lot of money on grain to feed its people because for various reasons it can't grow enough to feed them. And do you have any comments about that? I think it's interesting.
Well, of course, I guess North Korea is the prime example of that, as far as I know. But when countries start to spend money on armaments, they have to get the money from someplace. And the civilian population, the first source of that money.
Now, let's talk about your main character, Peter Williamson, whose task is to keep, he works for the National Security Agency, and he is supposed to keep America and its leaders safe from acts that would threaten their safety. He's such an interesting character because he's forceful, he's brilliant, he's committed to his job, and yet he has the flaws that we humans have. How did you come up with such an interesting hero?
Oh, I don't know. I just, I guess he's the combination of qualities that a number of individuals whom I have known have. And I guess that's the only thing I can say. I haven't really analyzed it that carefully.
Now, when it comes to intelligence, Peter, your main character, teaches a course on it at Georgetown University. And in your book, he says he believes that intelligence is the poorest studied, worst understood, least disciplined million-dollar industry in the world. So do you have any comments about what he has to say?
Well, yes, I think that there's a great deal of intelligence activity on the part of many countries, but I just wonder how thoughtfully each country, including ours, has given to, you know, doing it properly. I don't know. I'm not saying I do know. I just, when you see the haphazard occurrences that happen, one wonders how much clear thought goes into these efforts.
Very good point. Now, one of Peter's strengths is that he's an expert in the latest electronic technology, in both collecting, retrieving it, and analyzing it. And in your research, what did you learn about our present capacity to monitor people's conversations? In your book, you talk about the fact that there might be microphones that can record people's conversations outdoors. Is that just a fantasy that you wrote for the book, or could that be true?
No, that's true.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not.
Wow. So you're not safe anywhere when you want to
talk.
Well,
I wouldn't go that far, but if the intelligence community wants to really monitor you, they certainly can. Indoors, outdoors, you know, in other words, I suspect, I do not know this for a fact, but I suspect that there are people who are in the United States and elsewhere who are being carefully monitored to find out what their thoughts and actions are or are going to be.
Now, in your book, various characters talk about increased, even more, surveillance in the future. Do you have any concerns about how far it will go, what our drones can do, what that people can maybe be able to look into your house and see what's going on?
Yes, I think that technology will increase.
Now, Dr. Healy, as a physician, you said that your medical background assisted you in writing the book. Now, in Osprey, someone gets killed using a chemical, potassium chloride, that can't be traced in the body. Is that possible?
And yes, that's accurate. The facts of the way that the assassination occurs is accurate. And the only way that potassium chloride, the increased levels of potassium chloride, could be determined after a few minutes would be to sample the liquid in the anterior chamber of the eye, which, of course, is not going to be done. You know, somebody dies of a heart attack, or what people think of as a heart attack, the anterior chamber of the eye is not going to be violent. That's, in other words, the potassium chloride, after a few minutes, disappears in the body.
If that's true, why don't more killers use potassium chloride, because it can't be traced?
Well, you have to inject it intravenously as a bolus. In other words, it's got to be injected in sufficient amounts so that it causes the heart to respond and to get somebody to let you inject them.
That's very true.
Requires a certain way of doing it, and that's why I thought it might be interesting to try and do it the way I did it in the book.
And it was excellent and very well done. Now, I hope you're going to continue to write, Dr. Healy. I certainly enjoyed reading Osprey, and I hope we'll see Peter Williamson in another mystery thriller.
Well, you're very kind. You're very kind. I appreciate it, and thank you.
And this is your first novel. Do you have any advice for aspiring writers out there?
I'm not sure I should say yes. Just plug away and do your best. If you enjoy it, do it.
That's Dr. William Healy in conversation with Carol Marks. His book is titled Osprey, and if you'd like more information, go to drosprey.com. That's drosprey.com. Carol Marks conducted the interview, and she'll be conducting another interesting conversation next when A Touch of Gray continues in just a moment.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy and you feel fine. But that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Doesn't always cause symptoms, but it can be prevented. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here is the host of the program, Carol Marks, in conversation with Lynn Trail. She's a successful author of children's educational material and an executive coach, trainer, and public speaker. She'll talk about her new book titled Sizzling at 70, Victim to Victorious, published by Balboa Press AU.
What led you to write it, and why do you call your book a biographical life raft?
Well, I spent my life after having a very traumatic childhood, very abused in every single way, and I grew up with a really low self-esteem, but a real desire to work with people. But there was always that feeling that I wasn't really being me, even though I worked, I became a school teacher because I hated every day of my school life and decided I wanted to prove that you could give kids a good time at school. So I went ahead and did that, but all my life I felt inauthentic, and I drew to me a lot of negative things and people and husbands and because I just didn't feel really good enough. So I've been seeking all my life, and I got into my 60s, and I'd done a lot of work on myself and really wanting to find wholeness. And I guess the icing on the cake was when I studied ontology for my coaching,
and that's
really
what I want.
Became a better observer.
And that's what I want to interrupt you a bit to ask you about what ontology is, and can you define it a little bit more in layman's terms?
Yes, certainly. That's what I try to do in the book. It's not an ontology for dummies, but it's ontology is really just way of being, and I just use the framework because it helped me. But it's really the language that creates your reality. So what you're speaking about and the assessments you make and being conscious of what they are. The thing that helped me the most was looking at the moods. Your predisposition for action. So what mood you're in is going to reflecting your actions, and being aware of triggers that make that happen was tremendous for me. And then the third part of the three circles that intertwine is the body, how that affects the body and the nervous system. And all the in the book, I at the end of each chapter, I tried to bring in one of these distinctions that had helped me so much to become my authentic self.
Now, Lynn, one of the things that you talk about that's important with ontology is that it points out the importance of the language we hear Why is that so important when it comes to creating our reality? I guess it's because we can hear so many things from our family when they're talking to us that make us feel not very well about ourselves.
Yeah. Well, I grew up being told that I was ugly and clumsy, and my mother told me no decent man would ever want me, so I made that a reality. The assessments that were given to me became my own reality, and then I married somebody who just took on that reality and told me every day how ugly I was and how clumsy I was, and, it became my reality, and that's what I believed in.
Well, talking about language, didn't you find the importance of having courageous conversations with the people you care about? And you had one with your then-new husband, Mick, about living in his house with all the mementos that his beloved deceased wife had cared about and collected. So we really have to talk to people that we're involved with about some difficult things, and we have to express them in the right way. And I always say, I hope you agree with me, that, well, Lynn, it's not what you say to someone else, but it's how you say it.
Oh, absolutely. And it's been an amazing help for me, because since I wrote the book, I dedicated it to my beautiful love of my life that I've met late in life, and had 8 beautiful years with him, and he was the one that really encouraged me to write this book, because he saw some transformations that happened, as I tell in the book. But the book was only out 2 weeks, and he was diagnosed with a terminal illness and passed away at the end of last year. And for me, I've had to go through this whole looking at myself as a victim again, being careful, and, you know, looking at that language. But before he died, I was able to be with him and talk about the fact that he was going to die, and it was really, once again, this beautiful, warm love that made something that could, well, it was very traumatic in many ways, because he went down so quickly with a brain tumour, and it was, looking at that, you know, I dealt with it so differently than what I would have done, say, 10, 20 years ago. And, yeah, as you say, it has to be the way you do it, you know, and when we were talking about, because he'd lost his wife, you know, after, and she was only 40 when she died of leukemia. And I could really identify what he must have gone through, but he wasn't able to talk to anyone about it. And so what we developed together was really, really special. And when he was, you know, dying, we were able to talk really honestly about it, and it was really beautiful.
And you talk in your book about the importance of being able to observe our moods and then figure out what causes them, and then perhaps react differently than we have in the past. Did you actually make notes or keep a journal about your moods?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And I just looked back at them, and it was quite traumatic, actually. The last year has been very challenging for me. And I looked back, and I'm about to start a book on grieving, because for me, it's been quite raw with other people's actions that came into it. So, it's been so important for me to observe, you know, in that framework that I talk about in the book. It's helped me so much to realize when I was in a particular mood and for the sake of what was I feeling this way, and being able to step in, observe, it's been a tremendous help and guide to me.
Now, I know you have 3 children, Lynn. How has your study of ontology helped you to have a better relationship with them?
Well, there's definitely a much more honest relationship. You know, they're amazing human beings. I often feel quite surprised, because they had my son calls them, an asshole of a father and an emotionally broken mother. But they are magnificent human beings, but there's much more honesty between us now. Particularly my middle child, my older son, he's a doctor of environmental science, and we talk about deliberative democracy and how we could talk with each other, and our whole, a lot of traumatic stuff that happened in his early childhood has been able to be open about. Now, I used to be very defensive about it when I wasn't healed, and now I can say, that must have been terrible for you, you know. And he said, that's all I needed to say. So it's just made the hugest difference, and even though they're in different countries many times, we are very, very close, and I'm so grateful for that.
And that's wonderful. And, of course, you must have realized talking to your children about their problems and their childhood, and that every child has such different experiences with their mother and problems that they have. And I've always found that amazing.
Yes, yes. And they have all dealt with it differently. And there have been some times when they've been quite angry with me, particularly the middle, you know, the son. But it's great, you know, to be able to have that honest reflection and how I can now look at myself, because I feel I've stepped into my own power. You know, it's not to say that I don't have moments of anxiety, and I'd be lying if I did say that I think we never finish that journey. But the fact is that I can be really honest and say, I acknowledge that. But it's really important for us not to get stuck in that resignation that's how it's always going to be, you know, that hidden but. You know, I'd like to be better, but. And that's what
right.
I was living in. And I find a lot of even the people I work with in executive coaching, you know, that they don't realize that they've got that hidden but and it holds them back. And it was held me back for years and years.
That's Lynn Trail in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled Sizzling at 70, Victim to Victorious, published by Balboa Press AU. And if you'd like to visit her website, it's trailblaze.com. It's spelled in an unusual way, TrailBlaze.com. That's trail with two L's, blaze.com. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And we are going the rest of the way on this program, joined by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who just moments from now is going to be speaking with Bob Dodson, the NBC News correspondent, whose American Story with Bob Dodson is seen on Today and other NBC News programs. He was also the writer and host of Bob Dodson's America on the Travel Channel. And he's going to be talking to Richard about American Story, A Lifetime Search for Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Things, which is published by Viking Adult. I assume you already have spoken with Mr. Dodson, Mr. Neer. And that being said, what can we look forward to in the next segment?
Well, he's got some inspiring stories. You know, remember the late Charles Kuralt used to go on the road in America and find interesting people, and that's pretty much the mantle I think Bob has picked up. He travels around and he talks to a lot of different people, and he's got some great stories, and really I guess it falls under the attitude of inspiration. You know, stories about people who have overcome great handicaps or deficits and really done some wonderful things with their lives.
This is a formula that works in literature, works in radio, works in television, but is used far too little, in my opinion. And that is shining the light on interesting people who are not necessarily celebrities. And I think that it is something that would really, really work in radio. You see it in local radio a lot, on local stations where they'll talk to people from the community. Old newspapers, they don't do them anymore because most of these guys have been fired because of budget cuts. Old newspapers used to have a columnist that would talk about community people and what they do, and they always were one of the most popular features in daily newspapers. Okay, we're going to hear the conversation between Richard Neer and Bob Dotson next, and then Richard will rejoin us for some final words here on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and now, as promised, here's our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, in conversation with Bob Dotson. He's an NBC News correspondent whose American Story with Bob Dotson is seen on Today and other NBC News programs. He was also the writer and host of Bob Dotson's America on the Travel Channel. He's going to talk to Richard about American Story, a lifetime search for ordinary people doing extraordinary things, published by Viking Adult.
So, Bob, obviously you're not like American Pickers where you're out freestyling and just trolling around for people with great stories to tell. So how do you come upon these people?
Well, I just don't pass them by. In our media world these days, you know, we reflect the powerful and the pop culture. And, you know, I kind of a long time ago decided that I might poke behind that media mirror and see what the rest of us were doing. You know, the people who are like, you know, too busy to tweet about it or go on talk shows, but they're solving challenges that we still face today. And so, you know, rather than reinvent the wheel every generation, I thought maybe we ought to take a look at people who have already come up with solutions to problems we still face.
And there is so much negativity, and obviously part of the media, we know that controversy sells, negativity sells. What gave you the idea to go with the positive stuff, the feel-good stories, if you will?
Well, I approach it a little differently than most, because when I go out, I do an investigative report on ordinary people. And most people, when they go out to do a feature story, or, you know, write a letter to your grandmother, you know, you're looking for all the good news, and that's pretty much what it is. It's like Johnny One Note. But what I do is I say, all right, if this person is doing something significant, and maybe they don't even know they're doing something significant because they're too busy doing it, then what I do is, all my relatives are cops, and they taught me when I was a very young reporter that the first person who talks in an interrogation loses. Because people will answer questions if you don't ask them, one right after the other. If you just fill in the silence, because they focus and they become a little more, you know. Well, it's like if you were on a Delta Airlines flight going off to see relatives, you know, the person sitting next to you will talk to you constantly if you pretend like you're paying any attention. Well, I don't pretend. I actually pay attention. So what I do is, and that's what the whole thing about the book. I mean, I've been falling from story to story since, you know, from red hair to gray. But I started realizing that these people had a blueprint. There was a story on the surface, and then there was a story that they revealed that, you know, really holds lessons for a lot of us.
Well, it says a lot about your interviewing technique, because you say that the first thing people tell you is what they think you want to hear, and then you just wait, and they start filling in the blanks, and before you know it, there are stories that they probably wouldn't tell anybody else just because you're listening attentively, right?
Well, you know, silence makes us all uncomfortable. So if you let people fill the silence a little bit, they focus their attention because they realize that you don't understand yet, and so they go, well, dummy, that's why I killed my wife. You know, and so I decided, why not use that same technique on ordinary people, because I think you could get a little further into it. For instance, I did a story, it's in the book, about a guy that came to Block Island, Rhode Island, which is off right off the coast, and when he was an eight-year-old orphan. And now, if you wanted to get a driver's license on this island, you had to go see Fred Benson, and Fred is 90 years old. So on the surface, I thought, oh, that's just a nice, funny little story, you know, 16-year-old trying to get a driver's license. But as we were waiting for the ferry to go home, Fred started to fill the silence, and he said, you know, I have been the police chief, the fire chief, head of the rescue squad. I started the baseball league here, and, you know, when I was 54 years old, I realized we were switching from a farm economy to tourism, and we didn't have anybody who knew how to build hotels, so I went to college myself and got a degree and came back as a shop teacher, and all the people who are building on this island today were my students. And so I didn't say anything, and he started to fill it a little more. He said, did I tell you I won the Rhode Island State Lottery? I said, no. And he said, well, I threw a birthday party on my birthday and announced to all the kids on the island that I would send anybody who wanted to go to college, I'd pay for it. And I said, Fred, you came here when you were a 8-year-old orphan. And he said, yeah. And he says, and all the parents would throw dinner parties on Saturday night. All the farm families were big, and they would brag on their kids. And he says, I remember one day Gerd Milligan, who was the farmer who took me in from an orphanage, got up and he pointed down at the end of the table and he said, you all keep an eye on Fred Benson and see what he did.
Now, so, a lot of these stories are decades old. Did you find a generational thing? Have we changed, or do you think underneath the surface, underneath all the media reports, there's still a lot of that that spirit, that entrepreneurial spirit, if you will, in America?
Well, you've got to get off the interstates, and you have to stop listening to to your Facebook, Twitter feeds, and actually talk to people. And you realize that not much has changed. I mean, back beyond all of that glitter and pop culture are still the same people who made this country what it is. For instance, there's a guy named Joe Otis who I passed by going to work day in and day out, and he was selling $5 potato peelers in Union Square in New York City. But I was kind of attracted to him because he wasn't hawking the potato peelers. He was actually trying to figure out how to do a really good peel of a potato with it, and he was sitting there in a $1,000 suit. And he was there every day, sun up to sundown. So I finally stopped one day and asked him what was going on. And he said, I've been doing this for many years because I came here from Australia so my daughter could go to Columbia University. And she, by the way, also sells because we have no retirement, no insurance, no savings. We live every day over what I can make. And then he went home that evening, and I followed him to have a cup of coffee with him, and he lived in a penthouse on Park Avenue, which is one of the most expensive streets in America. You know, so this is a guy. I asked him, I said, what was the most difficult thing you've ever sold? And he said, Christmas trees in February. And I said, well, you're making $5 on a potato peeler. You know, how could you end up in Park Avenue? And he says, never underestimate a small amount of money collected often. So, well, you know, we're turning to the Harvard Business School. We're talking to all the folks down in Washington who are in gridlock. And here's a guy who has lived his entire life. He was 72 when I met him. And every day, as he put it, he woke up and he loved the glorious uncertainty of starting every day fresh and seeing if he could make it. And when my story was on television, I called his daughter and I said, well, did Joe see it? And she said, no, it's after 6 o'clock in the morning, he was already out at Union Square selling. So okay. There's America. I mean, is that not a little microcosm of how we not only survive in this country, but we thrive?
You know, one of the things you point out, too, and it's typical of media, you know, we hear a story and then it goes away and we don't know the ending of the story. The guy could end up in jail. He could end up living to 100 years old. Do you try to follow up and keep in touch with some of these folks that you've talked to over the years?
Oh, absolutely. If you and I were riding in a car and the right front tire went flat, you know, you'd have to start reporting that on radio immediately. And if there were other reporters in the car, they would start tweeting and that sort of thing. And NBC has allowed me to go out and kick all the other tires and see why they're still up. So I have followed people, and you'll notice in the book, I mean, I've followed some people for 30 years because I just think their story was so great. For instance, I met a woman who was part of that great Dust Bowl exodus during the Great Depression. And she hadn't spoken to anybody in media for 50 years because she said, you know, Dorothea Lange took my picture, which became an iconic photograph of the 20th century called The Migrant Mother. It was kind of a an image of this woman who looked old beyond her years, and she had little children draped all over her, and she was kind of gazing off like the Mona Lisa. And she said, "Well, you know, you reporters never came back with even a picture." And she said, "They never really asked, Dorothea Lange never really asked me what I was doing." And what happened was I was 29 years old. I had 5 children. I was pregnant with another. My husband had just died. And I had sold a tire on my car in order to get some food for my kids that day, and I couldn't follow the harvest through California. And she said, "Every one of my children and grandchildren are now making more in 1 hour than I did that entire summer." She says, "I'm 5'2", and I pulled 100-pound cotton sacks, and I cleaned floors in a hospital, and I tended bar. I did everything to keep my kids together." And so, you know, I let her build the silence, and I finally asked her what I thought was a key question. I said, "The picture looks like you had lost hope." And she rolled back in her chair, and she looked at me, and she said, "Honey, if I'd lost hope, this country never would have made it."
Have you ever been fooled? Have you ever done a story and thought, "Boy, this is a great thing," and then found out later that it wasn't what it appeared to be? Or on the opposite side, met somebody who you thought, "Eh, I don't know about this guy," and then it turns out that there's a lot more, as you've talked about the guy selling the potato peelers, that there's a lot more that's positive about him.
Well, sure, I've been fooled a lot, but the thing is that what I try to do is get fooled before I do the story, because television's very expensive, and if we roll out, you know, with camera crews and airline tickets and get out in the middle of nowhere and then have a total fraud, that's expensive. And I've been duped down to the point where I'm almost on the plane, yeah. But the thing is that, you know, I try to do pre-interviews before I even go. So I get some real sense, and then I do, you know, just plain old gumshoe, you know, beat work. That's why I say it's an investigative story. It's not just to go out there and, you know, and take what cliches people are handing me, you know, because most of the time people come up to me with stories like, "Well, I like sailboats, and so you ought to do a story on sailboats." Or, "I just sailed around the world," and then the truth is, you know, they haven't sailed out of Poughkeepsie. But, you know, so I try to do my homework before I go. Sometimes it doesn't work. But I think more often, by using the techniques we've been talking about, you know, I've found people that have amazing backstories that I never, ever considered. I mean, I bumped into a doctor in Rushville, Illinois. And the reason I stopped by to see him was that everybody said he had not taken a vacation since World War II. I said, "Oh, really?" And he said, yeah. And he grew up near here, and he came back and opened his practice. So I went in, and I was sitting there in the waiting room, just waiting to see him, and I was talking to some of his patients, some of whom were like 4 or 5 generations in, and I realized that this guy had been, when he first opened practice in Rushville, he was charging $2 a visit, and by the time I met him in the 80s, he was charging $5 a visit. And this is a guy who had graduated first in his class at the University of Northwestern in cardiology and came home. And when I talked to him, he'd been up all night. He had seen 50 patients on his rounds. He had fixed 2 broken arms and delivered 3 babies, and it was 10 o'clock in the morning. He had a heart attack himself, and he was on his gurney, and he had people pushing him around the hospital so he could keep working. He even does house calls. And so I kept in touch with him for years and years and years, and he's now still in his 80s, and there are 4 or 5 other doctors in this little town. It's a regional hospital, and he fills in for them when they go on vacation.
That's Bob Dotson in conversation with Richard Neer. His book is titled American Story, A Lifetime Search for Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Things. It's published by Viking Adult. Richard Neer returns for some final words when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, as we come to the final segment of this two-hour get-together, and we continue our conversation with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. Richard, you and I go back through many, many chapters of radio, and I remember the night that you and I emceed a concert back in 1970 or 71 at a big arena on Long Island, where the headline performer, fresh off of his appearance at Woodstock, was the great and late legendary Richie Havens.
I think that was the first concert that you and I emceed, as a matter of fact.
Yes, it was.
And, it was about a 5,000 or 6,000 seat arena, as I remember. And Richie Havens, you know, it's funny. Richie Havens he was built like a football player, and he had big hands, and he couldn't play the guitar conventionally the way most guitarists play it. So he actually invented a way to play the guitar by tuning it in a certain way and using his very broad fingers to play it, and that's why he got that very unique sound.
Yeah, I think he also used a pick, because I remember he had a tendency to break strings, that his guitar strings would break while he was playing, because he played hard.
Yeah.
And he had this pick sort of banging into the strings. And I remember picking up on the stage after the concert was over one of Richie Havens' guitar strings and a pick. And I saved it, and I have it to this very day in my collection, a guitar string from Richie Havens.
The other big story about Richie Havens was that the famous scene of him singing Motherless Child / Freedom, which is basically one of the iconic moments of the Woodstock concert, and particularly the movie, was that was he was vamping. He had to kill time, and he didn't have a song left. So he made that song up on the spot while he was performing it.
Yeah, the band Sweetwater was supposed to play, and they got caught in traffic, as most bands were who didn't fly in by helicopter. And as a result, you're right, he had to fill time. It was like, well, I don't know any more songs. Well, make one up. And he did.
Yeah, and anybody listening to this who remembers, freedom, freedom, sometimes I feel like a motherless child. It worked. It worked. It became one of his biggest, hits. He never really had a lot of hits, but on underground progressive rock radio in those days, he was a superstar.
And you know what his biggest hit was?
Here Comes the Sun?
Yeah, absolutely. The George Harrison song
that
he covered.
And you know what I think his biggest commercial moment was for a while, and I don't remember what decade it was. It could have been the 80s, it could have been the 70s, maybe the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
An older man, Richie Havens, performed on a McDonald's commercial. I don't know if you recall that. And he sounded great. And he looked great. And I think he had his teeth work done, because if you remember back in the day, he had missing teeth. He was a very streety kind of guy.
Yeah.
I remember noticing in the McDonald's commercial, they actually showed him performing, he had a big white perfect smile.
Yeah. My favorite Richie Havens song was Follow. Do you remember that song? That was about 6 minutes long, and it was, listen to it today, it's poetry. It's really a great poem.
I got to go back and listen to all my Richie Havens stuff. That album Mixed Bag is such a wonderful collection of
classic.
His stuff. And the only thing I'm amazed about, and we're running out of time here, is that Richie Havens wasn't a bigger commercial success and more famous. It's amazing how few people in terms of the population, the music consuming public, have ever heard of him. But I know a lot of our listeners who are extremely hip will remember him, and we mourn the passing of Richie Havens, who died of a heart attack at, I believe, the age of 72 this past week. Richard, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Beverly Santinello, on the front line, our producer. Thank you, Carol Marks, the inspiration and host of the program, Steve Wiseman, Kevin Casey, the entire Touch of Grey broadcast team. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another 2-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.